Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Lowe's, loyalty is royalty. With Christmas right around the corner, treat yourself for less during the holiday season. Rewards members get early online-only access to Black Friday doorbuster deals on Thanksgiving Day, like the Hisense side-by-side fridge, just $799. Not a member? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid 11/27 only on Lowe's.com. Member only doorbusters and Midnight Eastern. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. If you missed any part of today's program, you can download the Odyssey app. Go back and listen to our podcast. Just find Cody and Gold under the Odyssey app through 965 The Fan. Earlier today, we had a chance to catch up with Nate Taylor. Of course, he is the Chiefs beat writer for ESPN, and we had a pleasant conversation about Sunday's win, the performance of the defense, how elite they were, especially in the second half, and even a look ahead to this Thursday's game against the Dallas Cowboys, a massive Thanksgiving affair that, according to ESPN, has major ramifications. I just saw a graphic that if the Chiefs win Thursday, they have a 73% chance of making the playoffs. If they lose, that number drops down to 46%. So stick around. We're going to hear from Nate Taylor of ESPN.
Yeah, the Chiefs, I don't know if they turned the switch on, but man, that fourth quarter was very reminiscent of like what the team did in 2021, right? After a, you know, slump in the midpoint in the season, and they got their act together, and as we all know, they at least reached the AFC Championship game. So it appears to be a pivotal point in the season. You know, them just completely dominating the Colts when they had to in the fourth quarter and overtime. And, you know, as much as I think people are relieved by them winning, as you said, they got to do this again on Thursday on the road. Against an interesting, if anything, Cowboys team. But yeah, you're not going to hear that many complaints because it's like they handed the ball to Kareem Hunt 30 times. Like, finally, you know, with the season on the line, it's like, oh, they actually had a more balanced offense. And that eventually wore down the Colts. I think there is some cumulative effect that people, I understand, they have a great feeling about, hey, if we just run the ball, we could get, you know, those third and shorts. Or, hey, we could put ourselves in more favorable down and distances. But also it wears out the defense because you're on the field for 42 minutes. And so the Colts being on the field constantly did them a good bit of service in the fourth quarter and overtime.
Yeah, something to the – we had to listen in every press conference that we were sitting in last week, the term hard runs coming out over and over and over. Hey, we finally got an opportunity to see that on Sunday with Kareem Hunt getting a ridiculous number of touches. I have to hope that that man is going to be in good enough shape on Thursday because he got a workload on Sunday.
We'll see how he does today at practice, right? I would not give him a ton of work, to your point. There's a feeling that, you know, Kareem could have always done this, and it was about Andy trying to manage him over the course of the season, especially once you didn't have Isaiah Pacheco, who was injured with the knee injury after the win in, against the Commanders. So they wanted to develop Rashard Smith, but they never want to give him the ball to actually run, you know, to actually play the position he plays. So they were sort of like, I understood like, okay, you know, if you don't want to give him the ball against the Buffalo Bills, I can kind of understand that because you do have the bye week. You want to make sure that, like, he's as fresh as possible for the stretch run. But then, of course, it's like, but then you didn't give him the ball against the Denver Broncos. Yeah. So what was that? And so now they've pushed their chips all in on him. And the belief has to be that he's going to have to split more touches with Isaiah Pacheco, who is, you know, clearing to, or should say ramping up to play Thursday, because they need him more than ever now, because Kareem Hunt, you know, didn't even come close to talking to reporters, guys. That's how that's how much he was like beat up. He was like, no, I can't even open my mouth right now, guys. Just like more ice, more ibuprofen, more massages. Like it's gonna be fascinating to see like how many guys practice, even what the practice regimen is today. Like you'd almost want to do it more like a walkthrough, because that was such a physical demanding game for five quarters, and now you got to go on the road and do it again. So all credit to Kareem Hunt for willing himself to get over 100 yards. By the way, no one had 100 rushing yards on the team all year until Sunday. It took 30 attempts, but congratulations, boys. We reached the 100-yard milestone. Excited to see how they figure this all out. Which I think will put a little bit more of the burden on Mahomes, because hey, you can't give Kareem Hunt maybe even 20 carries on Thursday's game.
Yeah, and is that any sort of a concern? Because you know, you and I had a conversation after the game Sunday that Mahomes appeared a little bit uncomfortable, like some sort of groin issue
something. It's a groin,
so he's definitely banged up himself. But that's a lot of the team right now, it seems like.
Yeah, so if you're if you need to be reminded, ladies and gentlemen, why we should not play games on a Thursday, even though I love Thanksgiving and the tradition of it all, it's like Patrick Mahomes is dealing with a groin injury, right? Rashee Rice wisely chose not to get tackled because he's dealing with his own hamstring injury. They are essentially like making Xavier Worthy C-3PO. They're just putting him back together every week. Hey, what is it this time? It's the ankle?
Cool. Yeah, multiple times on Sunday. It felt like coming off the sideline, throwing his helmet, just another layer of tape.
Yeah, like, can we, like he's literally C-3PO right now. And they're just like, no, just get his wires right. He'll be fine. He's got the shoulder. He's got the ankle, of course. You know, Trey Smith is probably not going to play in this game. It would not be wise for the Chiefs to play him, given his own right ankle injury at this point. So you have to, you know, insert Mike Caliendo into the lineup. Juwan Taylor's still dealing with his knee injury, even though he played actually pretty well in the second half of the game. This is just on offense. So, you know, the Chiefs put out this, you know, rinky-dink, you know, estimation, you know, report for an injury. But one of the biggest, I guess, revelations from that is Leo Chenault has a knee injury.
Mm.
And so, not great. Noah Gray, as we, of course, has, as we all know, he has a concussion. He will not play on Thursday. The league has basically made it virtually impossible for you to enter the concussion protocol on a Sunday game and then come back for a Thursday game. So that means you're going to see, you know, a little bit more of Robert Tonyan in that 12 personnel look. But, dog, I mean, they got injuries, and so do the Cowboys. They have their share for injuries as well. But if I'm Andy Reid, like, can we make this a walkthrough and we just – like, hey, here's the game plan. Here's some wrinkles we're going to do for the Cowboys. But I don't think you can go it at, like, even half speed today just to get the guys' bodies as recovered as possible for Thursday's game.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to the running back situation, of course, the Chiefs made an interesting move after the game on Sunday. They signed Damian Pierce from the Houston Texans, put him on the practice squad, obviously.
Yep.
I have my opinion on what he's going to look like in a Chiefs jersey this year. Hint, hint, you won't see him in one, most likely. But okay, from your perspective, with the injuries to Kareem Hunt, Pacheco with the MCL sprain, it doesn't seem like they want to involve Rashard Smith or Elijah Mitchell in the running game. Do you think there's a possibility we could see at least a decent chunk of Damian Pierce at any point in this regular season?
So my own father called me. My dad, Michael Taylor, called me last night because he was like, "So is Elijah Mitchell done?" And I was like, "Well, why would you sign? Why would you sign Pierce? Why would you? Why would you do that?" Now look, there's reports that like, hey, in terms of the Pierce sweepstakes, there was multiple teams who were like, "Hey, we'll kick the tires, we'll take a flyer." He knows that his former team is potentially the first game he could come back and play on December 7th against the Houston Texans. Now, if that happens, if he's in uniform, it'll be a limited role. I reported that last night. The more likelihood is, could we see Pierce in the last 3 to 4 weeks of the season? So that puts you right in line with, and again, some of this is playbook, some of this is pass protection, like, hey, are you not just going to, like, make a mental mistake because, you know, we rushed you on the field sooner rather than later, even though you're a veteran? Maybe the Chargers on December 14th? If not, then get right against the Tennessee Titans on, you know, right before Christmas on December 21st. I mean, come on. Unless Isaiah Pacheco comes back and is, like, above average, like, better than what we saw even at long stretches before the knee injury, I mean, again, to my dad's credit, they're like, they got it. Like, they're going to play him, right? Like, they didn't sign him to just, like, you know, do another Elijah Mitchell thing, right? And I was like, well, I hope not, because I just think, I don't know why the Elijah Mitchell signing didn't work out, because he's not been injured. At least Christian Fulton was injured in training camp, was coming off a, you know, minor knee procedure. Doesn't appear that that's really helped him. And, of course, he didn't get the necessary reps that Steve Spagnuolo would want. So it makes sense where, hey, he was a guy that was supposed to be a starter. It hasn't worked out. Okay, bad signing, but it makes sense. I don't know why they – the one time they played Elijah Mitchell, they didn't even give him the ball. Just like, what are we doing? So – for Pierce, the hope for him is that he can be a contributor at some point in December. But, hey, you have the 10-day break between Thanksgiving and against the Houston Texans. And, hey, by the way, you still got that Houston Texans playbook? You got some tendencies? You know what they're doing out there? Like, you know, I mean, he might be more helpful to you as, like, a scouter, as like a scout, an advanced scout. But hopefully we'll see him in uniform in December.
Yeah, and it was particularly impressive for me watching, you know, because coming into the game, the conversation was, how do you slow down Jonathan Taylor and how do you limit the tight ends? Because when the Chiefs' defense is at their worst, it's typically those two things, right? The Bills game, watching Dalton Kincaid go off and have the kind of day he did with James Cook rushing for 100 yards. Oof. Those two guys, Jonathan Taylor and Tyler Warren, who have been phenomenal this year, combined for barely 100 yards between the two of them.
Yes.
What do you make of that performance, especially the Jonathan Taylor thing? Like, I know that the Colts seemingly forgot that he was in the backfield in the second half of this game, but I mean, he had, outside of that big 27-yard run that he had, he was averaging less than 2 yards a carry, if you take that one away, and only had 3 missed tackles the entirety of the game, which he's been the best in the league at this year.
Right. That's a great point that you mentioned, Logan. Like, because he was not breaking tackles and there was only one chunk yardage gain, that may have played into the mind of Shane Steichen, where it's like, it's so clear that the Chiefs are, A, tackling well, that they're sending 8 men in the box and basically saying, hey, go beat man-to-man coverage. So how much can I trust my running back unless it's, you know, an early down run or a short yardage situation for him to get yards? So I thought Leo Chenault was excellent in the running game. You know, when Nick Bolton hits you, you're probably going to go down. Drew Tranquil had one of his best games of the season in getting that stop on 3rd and short in overtime. So part of it is like, hey, don't tell Shane Steichen that Jonathan Taylor's still his best player. But also, it's really nice when you do limit a talented running back through the first 3 quarters to where maybe the coaching staff looks at the stats and says, maybe he doesn't have it today. Maybe our scheme isn't really working as well. And so it sort of psychologically backs the other coaching staff into a corner. even though I want to remind everybody, the Colts never trailed in regulation. Never. They always had the lead. Crazy.
Yeah.
And they still chose not to run Jonathan Taylor. And again, sometimes you can galaxy brain this because it's like, hey, here's what the stats say. And if our quarterback can make the throws against the blitz, then, hey, we'll convert. And, yes, that's the case. But Daniel Jones is not as good as Jonathan Taylor is at his job. So by being successful in the first half, it really set them up to be more aggressive in the fourth quarter because they knew they had to get stops and get stops quickly. And so I don't know what the Cowboys will do other than trying to just get the ball to their two receivers. Maybe they could use Ferguson a little bit more. To your point, Logan, about, hey, the Chiefs have struggled, especially in play action with tight ends involved. We saw that a ton against the Buffalo Bills. So maybe the Cowboys, maybe that's their best sort of wrinkle, you know, curveball that they could throw the Chiefs. The Cowboys don't have as strong of a running game as the Colts, but if the Chiefs do as good of a job against the run, then it will put all the pressure back on Dak Prescott, and we'll see if he can find the answers or just be more productive than Daniel Jones. That is ultimately where this team has to thrive, is getting to third down. And if you're not going to show blitz in the first half, okay, here's our best blitzes in the second half based on everything you've shown us throughout the course of the game.
And that's exactly where I want to go next. Go ahead, Drew.
Nate, so I have a question just about like this. We talked about yesterday the importance of it feeling like the Chiefs needed a win this way, like the way that they won on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that you like maybe at the end of the year in January when we get to the final week or two of the season, if they make the postseason, we look at this game and this little stretch here where they lose to Denver in the way that they do, and then they find a way to win a close game as the turning point in, hey, they figured it out and they turned it around at this moment and late in that second half where the offense clicked and all of a sudden it just took off.
That's the hope. And again, I never love a team that has to feel like they can just turn the switch on, especially when the team is as veteran laden as this team, right? Nobody is really in their prime out of the core group, except for Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think to your point, Drew, like if they can win on Thursday, then they get that 10-day break and you are at home the next two games and you start going on a winning streak, then yeah, that could be the turning point. I know we're all good friends of Nick Wright, and I know he has this whole thing about the tackle that turned the tide, which is hilarious because things were a little dicey there in the Meadowlands in week, but that's week three. Like, you still don't really know who your team is or exactly how the season's going to go. But now we are getting into nitty-gritty time, and they did need a win that proved to them that when the game's on the line, they can make the winning plays, because every time before Sunday, they did not make the winning plays. I think it's really instructional for the coaching staff, too, that they have to do whatever is necessary to win on that day. That's how they have to coach now for the rest of the season. Like, you can't really start, well, we'll do this to set this up, and we just maybe want to tinker with that, and maybe we experiment with this, and, ooh, what about this personnel group or this lineup? No. What can win today? With the players you have, against the opposition you're going against, where can we find the answers, and how quickly can we get to them, and can our players execute in high leverage moments? That win needs to be the thing that gets the Chiefs into the postseason, because once the Kareem Hunt fumble happened, I think it's understandable for everybody to be like, is this just the season where everything goes bad? You know, everything, even Kareem Hunt fumbles, who never fumbles the ball. So they had to get that win on Sunday. But I am of the belief that you got to back it up. Sunday's game will not matter if you cannot, in front of everybody. There will be no other football game on. Everybody will be watching. If you can't back it up against the Cowboys, man, you just made things just as difficult, just as dicey as it was before kickoff against the Colts. So the hope is they need that win to sort of reaffirm themselves that they are a championship caliber team. And if thankfully they stay healthy, they have the chance to go on a run. And that's what playoff Super Bowl contending teams do. They get better as the course of the season goes along, and it would be no better time for the Chiefs to actually get better in the season than right after, you know, right before Thanksgiving, right at the turn of December.
I mean, I think they're like third worst passing defense in the National Football League. It's horrendous.
It's
like 250 a game.
And again, you want to get more DBs on the field against them versus what we saw in Buffalo, or hey, Denver's got like four really good DBs. We don't want to have more DBs on the field. We actually want to remove them off the field. Same way with the Colts. So you might actually want to spread it out a little bit more. You're going to be in climate control conditions. Patrick Mahomes historically plays really, really well in the dome. Hey, just don't have a back-breaking turnover to start the game where you hand the other team 7 points.
Yeah.
Like, hey, how about you not do that on Thursday? How about you get off to a fast start? That's been one of their underlining biggest issues, Logan, is they do not score points in the first quarter. It's appalling. They had 0 points in the first quarter against the Colts and won the game. You know, if I go through the box score right now, they had 3 points against the Broncos. Hey, okay, how'd it go against the Bills? 0 points in the first half. Or in the first quarter. They had 0 points in the first quarter against the Commanders. Now, the Raiders are – that was a preseason game. Let's move on. they had 6 points against the Lions. That's the last time they've had more than 3 points in the first quarter. Like, come on. You're setting yourselves up for two – like, why are you making the task more difficult than it needs to be? You know – tell your friends, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get back to cyberbullying the Chiefs, the last time they scored legitimate, like a touchdown against a legitimate opponent, not the Las Vegas Raiders, was October 12th against the Detroit Lions. They get off to terrible starts. So if the Chiefs just don't shoot themselves in the foot, they can really start to dictate this game because of your point, Logan. The Cowboys are there to be had. In particular, if you get a lead and then you can have all of your playbook available to you to where you're not just sort of having to drop back because you're in such
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Lowe's, loyalty is royalty. With Christmas right around the corner, treat yourself for less during the holiday season. Rewards members get early online-only access to Black Friday doorbuster deals on Thanksgiving Day, like the Hisense side-by-side fridge, just $799. Not a member? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid 11/27 only on Lowe's.com. Member only doorbusters and Midnight Eastern. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it gonna be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At Maurice's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Maurice's.com.
There's such a disadvantage on the scoreboard.
That was Nate Taylor. He is the Chiefs beat writer for ESPN. He joined us in the first hour of the program. Really appreciate him taking the time, as well as Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, who joined us in the 11 o'clock hour. 913-586-7965 is our number. Logan Weber filling in for Cody and Alex here on this Tuesday in the lead up to Thanksgiving. Drew Nixon alongside. And when we come back, we're going to get to Drew's college football conversation. That's next here on 96.5 The Fan.
What's trending?
Yeah, dang!
Brought to you by Telly Tire and Auto Centers. Winning starts with a great drive. Since 1942, Telly's certified techs have delivered complete car care with top brand tires and expert auto service. Keep your drive going. Take it to Telly. Visit TellyTire.com today.
Number one on what's trending, how about Paul Skeens? The Pittsburgh Pirates giving the 23-year-old right-hander a record $3.436 million from the team's pre-arbitration bonus pool, raising his two-year total to $5.588 million. Mind you, that's $3 million for a guy who is still not in arbitration yet. That's how desperate they are to try to keep Paul Skeens in Pittsburgh. He won't be eligible for arbitration until after next year. He broke a record that was around for a season. The guy whose record he broke, Bobby Witt Jr., who last year got paid $3.07 million by the Kansas City Royals.
Man, you know, baseball's so weird. I was talking to you about it during the break, Logan. If Paul Skeens were in the NBA, he would already be making, he'd already have signed a $300 million contract.
Oh, yeah. The max deal would be ridiculous for that guy.
Yeah. I'm pulling up what's trending now. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit behind the eight ball here. If you want to do number two, go for it.
I can. Number two, the 49ers beating up on the Carolina Panthers. Beating up on each other, more like. What might be the ugliest Monday Night Football game of the year, maybe of the decade? Purdy threw three picks. Bryce Young threw two. Chuba Hubbard and Rico Dowdle ran for 6 yards per carry last night and got 9 combined carries between the two of them. I have no idea what Dave Canellis was thinking, but the Niners get the win. They're 8-4. Panthers fall to 6-6 as their already slim playoff chances get even slimmer.
Thursday night games, they just tend to bring out the worst in the NFL at times, you know?
Yeah, but this was a Monday night game. Like, I expected something nicer.
Yeah, you would think so. But
Thursday night games, I'm with you. Thursday night games and international games, you should go into it thinking that they're ugly.
I don't know if it's still recovery from this accident. I'm all over the place. Anyways, number three on what's trending. KU plays in an hour against Syracuse. Yesterday, they got a win 71-61 over Notre Dame. Darren Peterson did not play, which I think is encouraging. The fact that you were able to win double digits, Syracuse looked like a salty team. You were able to get a good win without your star player. Just continuing to try to build and get him back in reasonable timing where they can play maybe against UConn or against some of these other opponents before conference play. But obviously you want to take things a little bit slower if they need to be, because you want to make sure he's fully healthy and ready to go for Big 12 play.
Yeah, I honestly don't think it's the worst thing in the world for Kansas that Darren Peterson hasn't been able to play very much here in the early going of the season, because it's allowed other guys to kind of step up and find their footing. It's allowed for Flory Badunga to really show people that he is a legitimate all Big 12 guy. Like, he is a possible mid first round pick coming up in this year's NBA draft if he continues to play at the level he's at, if he can stay out of foul trouble. It's allowed for Trey White to really solidify himself as that number three option for Kansas, which they haven't really had in recent years. That third guy that they can go to for a bucket and could give you 12 to 18 to 20 points on a given night. The biggest thing for Kansas is you have got to find three-point shooting in other places outside of Trey White and Darren Peterson. You know, Bryson Tiller was 0 for 5 from the three-point line last night. He has to be better. Cole Rosario is shooting at a 28% clip from three. Get your shooters involved. When Darren Peterson comes back, Jayhawks can hit the ground running.
Yeah, I think that, you know, getting the chemistry thing is interesting, because if he doesn't play for until conference play, blending him back in will be...
Yeah,
I think that dynamic could also be a little bit interesting.
That's a fair point. And then finally on what's trending, the Pro Football Hall of Fame has announced the semifinalists for their 2026 class. It includes notable names like Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning at the quarterback position.
Eli Manning, your
my
favorite
absolute favorite.
NFL,
I think that guy should never ever belong in the Hall of Fame. Somebody in the text line was arguing with me earlier. Oh, he had won two Super Bowls. He threw for 551 yards in those two Super Bowls. I know. How did he get to those two Super Bowls? Because he had great defenses behind him.
Yeah.
I watched Eli Manning on a week-by-week basis for a decade. I had a cousin that played in the NFL for years, and he played for the New York Giants when they won those two Super Bowls. Eli Manning is not a Hall of Famer. And if you watch that man every Sunday for a decade like I did and you thought he was, I think you're completely and utterly out of your mind.
Well, I think we do know that if Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer, then Philip Rivers is absolutely a Hall of Famer.
And he shouldn't be. Yeah, and he absolutely shouldn't be.
You're saying they're giving it away too much, like they gave Josh Allen that MVP last year.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. But I want to get away from the NFL conversation for just a minute. We've been backlogging this conversation for a while, but Drew, you're the football guy. You're 249 miles of college football podcast. I myself am a massive college football guy as well. So let's get into a little bit of what is happening in the collegiate ranks.
All right, yeah, we're going to talk some college football. A blessed time of our day to talk about some college football. You know, y'all are getting blessed with some college football talk today, whether you like it or not. And we're going to talk about the three locals who maybe we shouldn't be talking about them, but they all lost the past weekend. I feel like it's worthy conversation, though, because of, we'll get to Missouri last, because Lane Kiffin, will also get to him in a second. And Missouri and Lane Kiffin also connect in some way, shape, or form. We'll get to that in just a second. But KU, embarrassing loss, Logan. I don't know if you watched any of it. It wasn't even a good game between them and Iowa State. This was the best chance that KU had at making it to a bowl game, because just a couple weeks ago, Iowa State lost to a Colorado team that has just flat out not been good this year at all. Now they face Utah. It's looking ugly for KU and their bowl chances if they miss out again at 5-7 with all the investment in the program. It feels like Lance Leipold, he's not getting fired this year, but starting next season, beginning in April, actually, with all of the recruiting stuff and with spring ball, he will be on the hot seat. His seat will be very warm for spring ball as we get all the way through the summertime leading up until week one of next season.
I'm with you. I'm in the same boat. I believe that he's not in a risk of getting fired when this season ends. You know, even if they lose to Utah and they finish 5-7 again, I don't think he's at risk of getting fired. Next year, things are going to become much more in focus, right? He is going to be under the microscope.
Yeah.
Do I agree with it? To be honest with you, no, I don't, because he's taken them to two bowl games in the last 4 years, which is more than any other Kansas coach has in, I don't know, the last 15 years plus since the day they fired Mangino. I think that there is something to be said for, hey, let's refocus our expectations if we're a Kansas fan. But I can't say I blame them if they're upset at another season. If next year goes poorly again, they have another 5-7 year, 4-8. You've missed a bowl game in 3 straight years.
Yep.
There's a justification for it. All I'm saying is that Kansas, as a football program, that feels like a strange thing to do, to fire a head coach who's taken you to your only two bowl games in the last 2 decades.
I do agree that I think he deserves more credit than people give them. And a lot of what's kind of happened this season hasn't necessarily been his fault. It's that DK McDonald led defense. They stink. They can't buy a stop. They can't buy one. They can't make a play when it matters most. And that's kind of what's costed them a couple of the games that they've lost. As we know, the offense has kind of tailed off a little bit the last few weeks, but had looked really good to start the season. K-State, on the other hand, as well. Man, that was a brutal loss. I feel bad. I did the Instagram live right after, Logan, and I was like, I feel bad for K-State fans. I feel bad because, and Chris Klieman, to have the emotional press conference he did after the game, he's not going anywhere, I don't think, but I do think if they were to miss a bowl game next year, then there's potential that they might decide to move on. But I think he's there for the long run, regardless of what happens next season. But Avery Johnson, though, they're gonna have a decision to figure out with Avery Johnson, because if they lose to Colorado, they're 5-7, they miss out on the bowl game. Avery Johnson's gonna get offers to leave. If Avery Johnson bounces, what do you do at quarterback? You already lost Dylan Edwards. It doesn't look that great for that situation to end the way it would. If even if they make a bowl game, which I think going 6-6 and winning and going 7-6 is so much more than just going 6-6 and then losing a bowl game or going, dare I say, 5-7. But they have to win against Colorado, and that was a brutal, brutal loss where you can get a stamp, a signature win. It doesn't do anything for you other than lock in bowl eligibility, but that would have been a massive win for the season that K-State has had, where it's just been disappointment all over the place. It's kind of crazy. Missouri have been the best local team. You can make an argument Missouri State actually has also had as good of a season given the circumstances as these other local teams are better than that, rather, just given the expectations of K-State and Missouri in particular.
Yeah, with Mizzou, you know, you're playing in a gauntlet of an SEC schedule, and then you lose Bo Prabhula, and you... I will make the argument that there have been some questionable offensive decisions made about the lack of touches in big-time situations for Ahmad Hardy this year. You know, he barely got to double-digit carries against Alabama. He sort of went completely away from their game plan on Saturday as well. It just hasn't made sense a lot of the time. And when it comes to Chris Klieman, I don't think he's in any jeopardy of losing his job.
So
you know, he's taken you to four straight bowl games. You've won three of those four
bowl
games.
You won a conference title a few years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the only bowl game you've lost in the last 4 years was a Sugar Bowl loss.
To Alabama.
Yeah.
When Nick Saban was still coaching.
And so you just kind of have to take it for what it is. You know, K-State is not a program that I think should be waltzing around with, hey, we should win 8-10 games every year consistently. Unfortunately, and I hearken back again to my own fandom, K-State is a lot like Iowa in that respect, where they will have good years. They'll have a year where they go 10-2 or 11-1 and they get to a conference title game. And then, you know, they'll have a year where they go 5-7 or 4-8. And you're like, what in the world's happening here? Somehow those two things always kind of correlate with one another. Where like the number of times where I've seen Iowa have a phenomenal year in a year where they weren't supposed to be very good. And then the next year when they're supposed to be really good, they absolutely fall flat on their faces. That's kind of where K-State is at, where you'll have these really high highs and you'll have some low lows. But you're a football program that is a consistent, over the course of a decade, 7, 8, 9 wins a year on average. This is just one of those years. It's down. Injuries have plagued you. Avery Johnson's play has been kind of up and down with all the, hey, we want to keep him in the pocket a little bit more, or he wants to keep himself in the pocket a little bit more. Dylan Edwards is out, you know. It's just sort of the way this year has gone for K-State, unfortunately. The ball hasn't bounced their way in the biggest moments. You just chalk this one up as bad luck and you move on, because I think you have the right guy in Chris Klieman.
Yeah, and there's so many close games where, like you said, the one thing hasn't quite gone the way they thought, and then, you know, it's been one of those years where they haven't had an identity as much. But the connection that I mentioned, Lane Kiffin in Missouri. What the heck does he have? Lane Kiffin's not coaching Missouri. Well, I don't know if you've seen, the LSU forums are hot right now, saying that Lane Kiffin has bought a house in Baton Rouge. Whether that's true or not, who knows? Because we've seen rumors get thrown out there that have been absolutely false. We'll have to see. Lane Kiffin said he's focused on the Egg Bowl on Friday. On Saturday, we'll get an answer. And I really want Lane Kiffin to just put three hats out. I want him to go on game day. I want him to put an LSU hat on the table, an Ole Miss hat on the table, and a Florida hat on the table. And I want him to pick and choose in front of all of us where he's going to be coaching at for the future. I think that would be great. It'd be epic television. It represents college football. And I don't think people would be that mad, quite frankly, at LSU or Florida if he decided to go to Ole Miss, stay at Ole Miss, because he's been there and he's had a lot of success there. I do think Joel Klatt, and he made a comment on this, was correct in that if Lane Kiffin leaves, I think he loses credibility. I agree, because that's kind of what he's done. That's his MO. I'm going to go coach for a little bit, then I'm going to bounce. I'm going to go here, then I'm going to bounce. And then I'm going to go here, and then maybe I can bounce again and get to another job that's good. It feels like he's made Ole Miss a contender. And in today, like if this was 10 years ago, by all means, take the Florida and LSU job. Nobody is criticizing you. This is a different age in college football where you can win anywhere. And he's got his team in the top five basically all season. Why not just stick it out and hang where you're at? You can win there and just make Ole Miss that powerhouse that Florida is still trying to become again. And LSU has kind of missed out on ever since Joe Burrow left Baton Rouge. It feels like this is an opportunity for Lane to, you know, stick with a Kurt Cignetti type approach and stay where he's at and just get that extension and be where he is.
I think that I'm with you.
I think he should stay.
I think he should stay. This makes the most sense that, you know, I don't necessarily buy into the, you know, Lane Kiffin's always leaving a job necessarily. I mean, you look back at his coaching history. Has he had a lot of jobs? Yes. But there's almost a justification for the ones that he left or why he was forced to leave somewhere, right?
Like the Tennessee situation.
Yeah, he gets the Raiders job. He was the offensive coordinator of the USC. Like, who wouldn't go from an OC at USC to the head coach of the Raiders? Duh, that's what you do, right? It's one thing if you're a college head coach going to an NFL head coach. But from a college coordinator to NFL head coach, fine. You know, the Tennessee thing, he gets let go from the Raiders. He goes to Tennessee, blew up in his face. Same thing happened at USC. It blew up in his face. And so those are situations where he was ushered out. He didn't choose to leave necessarily. I mean, he chose to leave Tennessee, but
that one's the big black eye in his career essentially to this point.
Absolutely. He gets fired from USC. He ends up at Bama and goes to FAU, you know, okay. Yeah.
Rebuilds everything and then goes to Ole Miss.
And then goes to Ole Miss just like you should.
Agreed.
But
yes.
Leaving an Ole Miss to go to an LSU or a Florida, to me, is at best a lateral move.
Right now, definitely.
At best. I mean, right leaving now? Florida is, in my view, that's more of a downgrade.
Which is where
with the way that they're with how those two programs are perceived right now. Because Ole Miss had some decent years even before Lane Kiffin arrived at Ole Miss. Florida's been bad since the day Urban Meyer said, "I'm out."
And if you want to go, Dan Mullen gave them some more relevance, I suppose, but he was, you could say, riding the coattails a little bit.
And even he got fired.
I was like, you could say he's riding the coattails a little bit of Urban Meyer in that case. But yeah, this is also where I get to Drinkwitz real quick before we wrap things up. If Lane Kiffin stays at Ole Miss, as a Missouri fan, you should not want Lane Kiffin to stay. If you're a Missouri fan, you should want Lane Kiffin to leave because that creates a greater likelihood that Coach Drinkwitz stays in Missouri. And I think that he's a good person to have in Columbia, given you know, the rough season. He's won double-digit games the last 2 years, which they hadn't done since Gary Pinkel was there. And, you know, I think that this, especially in this age where they had divisions back then and the SEC East was not as good as the West, for him to do it now has been impressive. He's a very good football coach. I wouldn't want Drink to leave, but I think if Lane Kiffin stays at Ole Miss, Drinkwitz will be gone. He'll take the LSU or the Florida job, I think, because that's where those two programs go next. Even if Lane Kiffin takes one of the jobs, Florida, I think they're going to turn and go to Drinkwitz.
I see Florida being where he ends
up. And if you're talking about Steve Spurrier, they want a guy like that back, great recruiter, where would you be at? One of the greatest states to recruit. Visor. What does Coach Drinkwitz wear? Visor. Spurrier, fiery guy, good for college football, a little bit of a quirky dude. What is Coach Drinkwitz? The exact same individual.
Yep.
He fits that program from a historical standpoint. I wouldn't blame Lane Kiffin for leaving necessarily, but I think it would be the wrong decision, and that all of a sudden could turn to where Missouri all of a sudden has to look for a new head coach, and that'll be really interesting given the way that the portal window opens and all of that other stuff. If Lane Kiffin gets the go-ahead to coach in the college football playoff, and that decision's made, do you scramble and go to Drink? Or let's say Lane Kiffin stays. When does Drink get hired, and when does he leave? Because if he leaves right in the middle of that portal window, Missouri is going to get ate up, and it's not going to be that good for them from a roster standpoint moving forward.
It's
fantastic weekend of college football.
If I was to guess what I think happens, I lean towards Lane Kiffin staying at Ole Miss, Eli Drinkwitz getting the Florida job, and Mizzou needs to then back up the Brinks truck for Eric Morris, who is the head coach over at North Texas. Yeah. Not only back up the Brinks truck for Eric Morris, but also for the Mestemaker kid, the quarterback. Bring him along with you.
Heck yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Logan, come on. It's not a lateral move. It is. I know.
This is an LSU homer.
I will back Logan. It is a lateral move. And this is the thing.
Because you won one title with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, people think that LSU is this blue blood job. Stop it.
No, and this is the thing, too. Kurt Cignetti leaving Indiana for Penn State would have been a lateral move. And I think you have to be honest. It doesn't sound right, but in today's day and age in college football, you can win anywhere when you have some booster help pairing yourself along with being a good head coach, which we know to this point, Lane Kiffin is a very good football coach. We know he is because he's having drastically long-term success at Ole Miss, where nobody else has really had that long of success for in terms of being a top five team in the country. Hugh Freeze had it a little bit. He was also kind of, you know, finagling and recruiting, which who doesn't, I guess, in college football, but
a little bit less happening now, I guess you could say, with it being out in the open, but
Garrett is an LSU guy, and we both need to look up NIL rules. There's a limit you can spend. We understand that.
Have a ton of money.
A budget that you have to spend. And I understand that money is going to be spent by LSU. I get it. But why would you leave a situation where you're currently a top five program and you're recruiting at a top tier level? How much more of an upgrade is LSU from Ole Miss? Would be my question.
And in a situation if everything was in place, yeah, the NIL looks fantastic. You're in a hotbed of recruiting
Louisiana talent.
Absolutely. But look at look at everything else involved in it, right? Who's the head coach answering to, right? If Lane Kiffin shows up at LSU, he's going to LSU where not the athletic director is hiring because they don't have an athletic director. It's not the president that's hiring him because they don't have a president. It's the governor of Louisiana who is hiring you, which means they hire you, then an AD, then a president who was in no way, shape, or form associated with your hiring process whatsoever. Those are the guys you have to answer to. There's just so much more outside of the game of football that I think is going to cause this job to be way too much of a headache.
I think that was what I think Brian Kelly said something similar to that when he got to LSU. I think he was told. He was like, where's my office? He goes, that's not your office. That's like your space. Like it's not yours.
Yeah.
It's LSU's. You're just using it right now.
It's
not your office, Brian Kelly. It's LSU's office. You just happen to be the person who's having that space currently.
Like LSU as a football program, do they have pedigree? Yeah, absolutely they do. But they have pedigree because they caught lightning in a bottle in 2019 or 2018, whatever year that was, with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
The greatest college football team of all time.
I'm with you. I believe it's the best college football team that there's ever been. And then the only other real pedigree you have in the last, I don't know, half century of LSU football is because you had the greatest head coach in the history of college football.
Hey, shout out to Garrett. He said he's more in touch with all the sources. Garrett, if he goes to LSU, I will give you a little bit of credit in this.
Yeah.
I'll give you a smidgen
high five
of
and
credit.
A ham sandwich there.
Just
Garrett.
Hope that he can make the college football playoff again. We all thought it was guaranteed with Brian Kelly. That roster was loaded this year and they stink. They almost lost to Western Kentucky the other day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, give Brian, you know, that's one thing you can point out. Like when Brian Kelly was at Notre Dame, they were getting to the college football playoff. Couldn't get to the college football playoff at LSU.
They made a national title with Brian Kelly.
It's an interesting dynamic. That's going to do it for today's program. Drew and I will be back tomorrow here on Cody and Gold. Up next, it is The Drive with Carrington Harrison and Rob Brenton. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Get ready to shop Lowe's Black Friday Doorbuster Deals to save $150 on a 30-inch Blackstone griddle, now $299. Plus, choose a Whirlpool top load washer or Midea top freezer refrigerator for just $398. These limited-time Doorbuster Deals go fast, so get holiday ready today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid 11/28 through 12/1. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. you'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast